Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and the topic of our podcast today is White Rose, the execution of Sophie Scholl. Sophie Scholl was a young university student in Germany during the Second World War who was an active member of the White Rose Society, which was a resistance group. And we're going to talk about her story, kind of a sad story today, Colonel. But we'll get to that in a minute. Before we do, let me introduce my co-hosts. The very charming and debonair, the moral compass of our podcast, the man who's known as the most dangerous man in podcasting today, that is none other than the very honorable Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Doing wonderful today, Timmy. How about yourself?
Oh, I am good. Are you excited about this topic?
I'm excited about this topic, and I'm excited that we're kind of on a roll here with the history stuff.
Now I know you were a little confused yesterday because I told you we were going to cover the White Rose Society.
I do know everything about arranging roses and floral patterns.
I know you were doing some research on Axl Rose and that.
Axl Rose? Yeah. And then, of course, when you said Rose, I naturally went to Pete Rose,
the Hit
King.
Yes. So, but you got it straightened now. You know what we're talking
about. Well, because you threw me when it said the White Rose Society, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, hold on. Everybody likes Pete.
Yeah.
Everybody likes Pete. Pete's universal.
I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah, you got to love Pete.
Yeah, those from Cincinnati love Pete anyway.
Yeah, but you know what? It's just me and you.
Yes.
You and I.
That's true.
We do not have that foul-mouthed devil.
We do not have the pleasure of the wit and wisdom of one Brandy Herman, who is unfortunately still not able to be with us yet. We hope her, you know, we wish for her all the best, and she will be back. She'll be back with a vengeance, I'm sure.
She'll be back with a vengeance, and she is what we said about her on the last podcast. But
yeah. But it gives us a chance to take a step back from serial killers and talk about other historical topics.
Well, she likes all that gory stuff.
Yeah.
She can't, if people ain't dying, and this gets a little gory at the end.
This is gory. So, yeah. But I think it Brandy kind of, you know, I think she has some sort of sexual gratification out of the serial killers.
Yeah, she does, because I noticed even on warm days, Timmy, she's a little perky up top, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. When we start talking about Ed Gein.
And I thought it was air conditioning. I was like, no, that ain't there. It's hot in here. Yeah. What is it? But she's, you know, like, and then he made lampshades out of this.
And, of course, we can say these things because she never listens to the podcast.
We can say anything we want about the girl because she don't listen to anything. She don't listen to us when she...
She don't even listen when
she's here.
Right.
She just reads her parts and goes on about her business.
And makes her commentary.
But it's put us in a bind because we've had, you know, the things that we've done and the one that we did, you know, apparently People hear that, and they want to sponsor. We have people that want to sponsor a real podcast. But then they went back and heard the ones with the devil, and they were like, well, are you guys...
They can't be associated with her.
Exactly. We can't associate our company's good name with
Procter & Gamble was going to step up to the plate, but then they heard cock holster coming out of her mouth, and they said, hey, you know, we can't sell our soap on your podcast. And so...
Ford was interested, and then they dropped us.
Yeah, she's too controversial. Our branding.
Well, she's foul mouth. It's like a sailor. She's like a sailor on leave, Tim.
Yeah,
a drunken sailor.
She's not very ladylike at times. She's unladylike.
She's quite unladylike, and I know she has her followers. Mm-hmm. And you know what I can't understand is, Mr. Snellings, who's an official real life. Minister. Reverend, Minister,
yes. Byron.
Byron, Mr. Snellings. He is on Team Brandy.
Yeah.
But you know what I think he's trying to do? I think he figures if he can wear her down enough, she'll get a little bit of religion.
Well, that maybe that's it. Maybe he's out to save her. Well, as you and I, we're above reproach.
Well, yeah, he doesn't need to worry about us.
Right.
It's like our souls pretty much been...
We're golden when it comes to
stuff. We are golden, Jimmy. Yeah. We are golden.
I'm going to move on to our Patreon sponsors and give them a shout out. Our show is possible because of the generous donations from listeners like you on Patreon. If you would like to sponsor the show, support the arts, as it were, you can do that by going to patreon.com/historydweebs. You may pledge a little or a lot, or how much, Colonel?
Oh, just a wee little tiny bit. And we should make our listeners aware that elections have consequences, Timmy.
Yeah, I hear that. I'm beginning to see that.
These Republicans in the House, they're wanting to cut funds to the History Dweebs podcast.
Yeah, so get out there and call your congressman.
Call your congressman, call your senator. Yes. Tell them that you believe in arts and history dweebs should not have their funding cut.
PBS, NPR, you can ax them all you want.
Those
not
rookies,
us.
We ain't worried about them. But.
Yeah, and they don't have much of a following anyway.
No, not really.
Okay, so we would like to give a special shout out to our Patreon sponsors, and those are Alicia and Chip, Jen Moyer, who's very generous. Thank you, Jen. New to our Facebook page, but she says she's been listening for a while. We certainly appreciate you joining our page and joining our Patreon group. Brandy McBride, Andrew Happ, Lise, Amber McCain Scoville, Jahara, Jennifer Siemens, and her son Hunter, and her mom Linda. Thank you very much. Angelo, Big Angelo, thank you, Angelo. Bridget Clavey, crazy Cindy Lou, Charlie from the Insight Podcast. If you haven't heard the Insight Podcast, you should check it out. It's much better than ours.
If you're into real podcasts,
it's mysteries, true crimes.
Yeah.
Really cool podcast, so check it out. And, of course, Rudy, the Wonder Dog, is also a Patreon member. Thank you, Rudy.
He's back on his feet and healing up well, Timmy.
Oh, that's good. You took him to the vet yesterday, right?
I took him to the vet yesterday. They said, and, you know, it was actually, and I'm not joking about this, when he was at the vet, they found a lump on his chest.
Oh, no.
And it was very scary because they said, let's deal with his back, then we'll deal with his lump. Let's see. Best case scenario, this is a cyst, and he's only 4.
Right.
So he said, best case scenario, this is a cyst, it goes away, but let's wait till it's back. So every day I'm feeling his chest, and yesterday I said to Renee, I said, you know, I just want you to rub his chest, tell me what you think. Don't give me any opinions on it, or don't, you know, I'm not saying anything, just tell me what you think. And the lump was damn near gone.
Really? That's
a good sign. That's a good sign that it was a cyst. And
you know, I had a weird experience once. I had lost some weight. I'm currently exercising, as you know, and I'm trying to use. But the last time I went through that and I lost some weight, I was feeling on my chest and I felt a lump. And I was like, what the hell is that? So, of course, you know, I'm freaking out. And then I look it up and... Turns out it's supposed to be there, but you know, because I had weighed more, I had never noticed it before. So
and I
hopefully it's nothing with
something
Rudy.
Very similar happened. This you know, it's funny to mine. A friend of mine at about 19 had testicular cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working, I was in school, I was working out the roses at a pizza parlor.
Right.
Making pizza. And I noticed as I leaned against the counter where my hips were, mm-hmm. it hurt on one side.
Uh-huh.
And so when I got home, my mom started feeling around, and I had a lymph node mm-hmm. And swollen up in my groin.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor, I called the doctor, and he said, okay. He said, he asked me just flat out. He said, do you have any swelling in your testicles?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no. And he said, do you ever examine your testicles? And mm-hmm. I was like, you know,
daily.
Define examine, doctor, because
familiar.
I soap them up a little too long sometimes. But anyway, he said, well, you know, have you noticed any lumps or anything? And I started feeling around. I'll be damned if I did not feel a lump. And I said, oh, you know, so I knew. Now, you know, your mind does this to you
yeah.
because my friend had just had testicular
right.
cancer.
And you watched Brian's song recently.
Yeah, and I've got testicular
right.
cancer.
Right.
And I was very thrown for about, well, I guess he saw me the next day, but I was very thrown until the next
sure.
day.
Scared.
And it turns out that I do have a small lump on one, which about 1 in 3 men have. It's
mm-hmm.
called an appendix.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it turns out.
So did you have an appendectomy?
No, I actually, about 30 years later, I did have, yeah, whatever. But it turned out I had a spider bite on the back of my leg, and it was causing that. But it's,
yeah, you know, I know you deal with anxiety like I do. And at one point or another, if you have anxiety disorder, you've had every major illness known to man, at least in your mind.
Well, and I have, yeah, as you said, we all suffer from something, and mine tends to be depression,
mm-hmm.
but I will get, I have a hint of OCD,
mm-hmm.
which will cause, and I said this to Shonda the mm-hmm. other day, that it's called catastrophic thinking, and basically
yes.
your mind goes to the worst possible place, and I went through.
And that's reinforced, of course, by Mr. Google.
Yeah, 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 and
it's the worst thing you can do. My doctor always told me, stay off the internet.
My doctor told me one time. I came in and I had, and try not to make this short story, but he
mm-hmm.
said I had had a bunch of dental work done,
mm-hmm.
and I was, I guess I woke up one night with kind of night sweats.
Okay,
and. Now, a friend of mine had just been admitted to the hospital in an emergency situation with endocarditis,
mm-hmm.
which is an inflammation. You get it from...
Oh, yeah. So when your friend gets something, you've automatically
yeah.
start thinking that you have it.
I asked how'd this happen? He said, well, I had dental work done. The bacteria went to the valves in my heart.
Yeah.
So I called my doctor up and I said, I think I might have endocarditis. And he said, that's interesting. Why don't you come on in? And I came in, and he said, now, what's your son? Can you walk up the steps? And I said, yeah. He said, so you're not so weak that you can't walk up the steps? I said, no, I'm fine. He said, are you running about 103, 104 fever and having trouble breathing? I said, no. He said, then you don't have endocarditis. He said, but I could see where you'd be concerned about this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what he said to me. He said, I can see where you'd be concerned about this. So you know the best way to not get endocarditis? And I said, no, what is that? And he said, stay off the fucking internet and let me diagnose you.
Yeah, my doctor's pretty much the same way. I had a similar story where I thought I had... I had heart disease
mm-hmm.
because I was waking up, couldn't breathe in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I go to my doctor and I tell him my symptoms, and he says, yeah, you got sinus infection and your sinus are draining at night. And
mm-hmm.
that's why you can't, you're having trouble breathing and you're waking up. So I was like, how can you just say that? You haven't examined me. So he gives me an EKG and all that. So, yeah.
You know, we'll get on this, but you know what happened to me last night? And I'm going to buy a pair of Bluetooth
mm-hmm.
headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Is I fall asleep listening to, and I don't listen to podcasts, but I listen to old-time radio shows, horror shows,
mm-hmm.
Scary, you know, mm-hmm. stories on I guess they are podcasts. But, mm-hmm. And I fall asleep wearing them, listening to them. Last night I woke up and I had the damn cord to my headphones were wrapped around my neck. And I don't know if that's something. It's like the third time it's happened this month. And I don't know if Renee is doing it when I'm sleeping.
It was an accident.
She tried to choke out the
kernel. He was listening to Insight. And,
Death he just expired. But I'm going out tonight and picking up a pair. Because all my kids have the wireless.
Yeah, the wireless kind.
Beats. They all got the, you know, I'm.
Man, if next time I go to Thailand, let me know. You can get them rip off Beats over there really cheap.
Can you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm picking up a set of headphones.
All right, let's talk about the White Rose Society and the execution of Sophie Scholl, shall we?
Well, we're 15 minutes into this. We might as well.
All right, so our story takes place in Nazi Germany in 1942. So this is 3 years into World War II, at least for the folks in Europe. 1 year into it for us here in the United States. But anyway, during, of course, World War II, the vast majority of people in Germany and those in the conquered countries of Europe, at this point, Germany had conquered most of Western Europe, they were playing it safe. They were bystanders, trying to get along with their lives the best they could. They would not speak out against Nazi oppression. Or risk being arrested or even executed. And so most people went along to get along, basically.
Went along to get along, Timmy.
And, of course, the Nazis were notorious for developing their police state. And, of course, we're not going to go into all the atrocities with the Jews and the disabled and the gay folks.
Pretty much everybody. The artists, the teachers, everybody.
And that included anyone who spoke out against the Nazi regime. And, you know, the research in this story I found interesting. I knew this before, but what I found interesting in researching this story is that, you know, of course, the Gestapo is the most feared secret police in Germany. And, you know, everyone was afraid to talk or say anything against the Hitler regime because they feared retaliation by the Gestapo.
Hitler was not big on freedom of speech, Tim.
No, he
or
was
freedom of the press.
Or freedom of anything.
Or freedom of religion.
Yeah, he was...
he'd pick out your damn lunch for you if you were in his... Yeah.
He was not the most progressive leader in the world. But anyway, the Gestapo, which we always, you know, read about and see in the movies and stuff, you would think they were on every corner.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they were not. In a lot of places, in a lot of, you know, small villages and towns, they may only had one or two clerks, you know, basically clerks mm-hmm. that worked for the Gestapo. They were not as widespread as, you know, people believed. Where they were able to get information on people who were speaking out against the regime is by regular people turning them in.
Yeah, spying on each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what Russia did.
Exactly. I mean, it's pretty common in any totalitarian society. One story I read while I was researching this is that, of course, during World War II, there was, of course, most German families had radios,
mm-hmm.
But they were forbidden from listening to radio stations from outside of Germany, especially the BBC. So they even had these little, almost like these door hangers that goes on, you know, on hotel rooms, like to...
Yeah, do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
I'm with a hooker.
Exactly. Do not disturb. That you could hang on the radio warning that it was, you know, a federal offense to listen to foreign broadcast. Well, you know, one of the things that Hitler did after he took power was not only did he... rein in civil rights, but he started the Nazification of all levels of government.
Right.
And if you spoke out, or if they have any, if the German government had any indication you were opposed to them, you would be replaced, whether you were a fireman or a policeman or a teacher. And one of the things they would do is that the BBC would broadcast children's programming.
Mm-hmm.
So teachers who were members of the Nazi Party would when their class would start, would ask these 5 and 6 year olds in their class, "Hey, what did you guys listen to on the radio last night?" Well, if they said, "We listened to whatever the show was," sure, the popular BBC, they would report that to the Gestapo. So it was very dangerous at that time to speak out against the Nazi government.
When you look at all these things, Timmy, and you look at these, as you said, totalitarian regimes, there's always this tipping point, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tipping point where people waited too long to resist.
Yes.
If they had resisted, now I don't know with Hitler, because they...
Hitler came in power, he was appointed. First of all, he wasn't elected.
Yeah.
But when he came in power, they were a minority. The Nazi Party was a minority in Reichstag. Yeah.
They were just given power. He became chancellor, and once he became chancellor and president.
Right. Well, once he became chancellor, of course, they had the Reichstag fire that they blamed on the communists, which was a prelude for them to crack down on communists. Then they had the Night of the Long Knives, where they broke, cracked down on even some people who were allied with him.
Yeah,
and then of course the Night of the Broken Glass, which they put the restrictions on all the Jewish citizens. So you're right; it's incremental and creeping, I guess.
And I think we always give this disclaimer: stay away from politics. But so many people have compared Trump to Hitler,
mm-hmm.
and I like to believe that the system of checks and balances that we had put in place in our government could never allow something like that.
Yeah, and certainly he says some outrageous things. We don't know yet, basically, what's going to happen. But certainly he said some things that has raised concerns with people.
Raised concerns about him wanting to be a true authoritarian.
Yes.
But I think that's the worst we could ever have here. And I think, Nixon was probably, in my lifetime, as close as I can remember to that.
Yeah. So,
and even he was limited in his power.
Because there was checks and balances. So let's hope we never go there. But anyway, let's get back to our story. So anyway, even though the Nazis were pretty ruthless in persecuting any dissent, any people who would dissent, there were resistance groups throughout Europe. We always make fun of the French surrendering in 5 weeks or whatever it was. But really, without the French resistance, D-Day would have never been possible.
Right.
So there were groups that organized. And now, as you look back, more people will say in history they were opposed to Hitler and what they did to stand up to Hitler than actually did at the time, of course. But there were groups, and one of these groups were a small group of college students in Munich, Germany, and they became known as the White Rose Society. And they chose the symbol of the white rose because it represented purity, and they were opposed to the war. Now, this is 1942 when these students started organizing. So at this point, Germany was starting, the war was starting to go bad. It was going bad. Not only were they experiencing bombings from the Allies, they were in a quagmire in the East. This was around the time of Stalingrad.
Mm-hmm.
So the war was not going well. So these students got together, and these are mostly liberal arts students. Some were medical students at the University of Munich. And they had, you know, they started talking about a better world. You know, they saw some of the students had went to the, had served as medics on the Eastern Front. They had saw the atrocities that the German soldiers had committed. And they knew kind of what was going to, you know, the thing is they knew what was in store for them once the Russians made it to Germany. The Russians, you know, we always think of the war from our perspective in the West, but it was really most of the atrocities occurred on the Eastern Front, where the retreating Germans would just kill whole villages and rape women, and
they were angry.
Yeah,
I mean, they were angry, yeah. And it didn't matter. You know, and we'll get off track here, but when Germany was getting divided up, people wanted to be. They did not want to be in the Russian section in Berlin.
No, they rushed to get to the west. The west. They wanted to
Russia.
Be.
The Russians just. Yeah, they just. They were like the old barbarians.
Yeah.
They came raping, pillaging, and looting, and they felt like that it was.
I think I read. Oh, terrible! Stalingrad.
Leningrad. And, yeah. Stalingrad.
They had. I had read that in one battle. I think around Stalingrad, they had lost 89,000 Nazi troops were captured. German troops were captured,
mm-hmm.
of which 8,000 survived.
Yeah.
And then they didn't come back. They didn't. Wasn't even returned home for like 10 years late after the war. So,
well, you know, and I.
So most of the prisoners were in fact executed or died in prison. And, you know, as we said, you know, there was an estimated 50,000 rapes that occurred after the war. So this is nasty stuff. But let's step back a little bit because we're in 1942. So the war is just starting to go bad for the Germans. Sophie Scholl was a German university student who was active in the White Rose Society along with her brother, Hans. It was a nonviolent resistance group to Hitler and the Nazi Party. And when I say nonviolent, it was totally nonviolent. All they did basically was distribute leaflets around Munich, and they mailed leaflets around the country urging Germans to oppose Hitler's regime. They would deliver them by hand, and they would also mail them, and they would also, spray paint graffiti around campus, like down with Hitler or whatever. Mm. Sophie was born on May 9th, 1921, and then why is that of an important date, Colonel?
May 9th, 1921?
Yeah. May 9th is my birthday.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. She was born on your birthday.
Born on my birthday, 40 years before I was born, but on my birthday. And also, it was also Stephanie Quick's birthday. So, and one day before Brandy's birthday. Now, we've got like 3 stories coming up where people were born on my birthday.
Yeah.
It's so weird. But Sophie was born on May 9th, 1921, in Frankenberg. I'm going to butcher some of these Germans' names. Germany. She was the 4th of 5 children born to Robert and Magnalia Scholl. Robert Scholl was the mayor of Frankenberg. Sophie had a happy childhood. She was close to her brother Hans, who was 3 years older than her. She was 11 years old, and when she was 11 years old and Hans was 14, Adolf Hitler came to power in 1932. Sophie was a child when the Nazis began controlling all aspects of German society. Initially, Sophie was unaffected, but her father was critical of the Nazi regime. In fact, he was went to prison for a time for denouncing Hitler. He was actually the mayor of Frankenberg at the time. In school, both Hans and Sophie, though, were apolitical. They were taught the Nazi doctrine and about the superiority of the German race. even though their father was opposed to Hitler, like I said, they were pretty apolitical. They were not necessarily anti-Nazi throughout their early childhood. Against their parents' wishes, Hans joined the Hitler Youth in 1932, although he quickly became disillusioned with it. At the age of 12, Sophie joined the female equivalent of the Hitler Youth, the League of German Girls. Initially, Sophie enjoyed all the activities of the group, and she was promoted to squad leader. However, after her initial enthusiasm over the activities of the group, she became uneasy and had a conflict with her conscience of the dealing with the Nazi ideology that was promoted in the organization. In 1935, the Nuremberg Laws were passed, which increased the discrimination against Jews, banning them from many public places. Sophie was good friends with a Jewish teacher who was fired and eventually taken off to a concentration camp. She also, Sophie would later study to be a kindergarten teacher and a nurse, and she would see German police take away people who were mentally disabled and to take them away to concentration camps.
Sometimes it'd be not mentally disabled, but there are people I think around here that need to be taken away.
You mean on this podcast who's not currently here?
Yep.
Sophie,
mentally deranged.
Sophie complained when two young Jewish friends were barred from joining the League of German Girls, which is kind of weird why they would want to join the Hitler Youth. But anyway, she was reprimanded for that. Overall, though, Sophie had a happy childhood, and she was loved by her parents and siblings. She was an excellent student, always received good marks. She was an avid reader and developed a strong interest in philosophy and theology and art. She developed a strong Christian faith. Her parents were Protestant that emphasized the dignity of every human being. The religious faith proved an important cornerstone for her opposition to the Nazi ideology of the German society. She also developed a talent for art, drawing, and painting. She became quite acquainted with their artistic circles in Munich, in circles that the Nazis were labeled degenerate. I know you know a lot about being a degenerate.
I know a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Escoll indicated her rebellious, she was rebellious as a teenager. So she started thinking more critical about the Nazi regime, and she started choosing her friends more carefully. She was started choosing friends as she grew into adulthood who were more politically sympathetic to her viewpoint. In 1937, her brother Hans and some of their friends were arrested for participating in a German youth movement. This was kind of a anti-Nazi movement, small movement. This incident left a strong impression on Sophie, and it would again re-energize her in her opposition to the Nazi regime. In 1940, at the start of the Second World War, Sophie graduated. Second World War started September 1939. 1940, she graduated from her secondary school, and she became a kindergarten teacher. As I said, she also worked at a nursery and at a mental institution. That's where she saw the patients being later taken away. She disliked. She was conscripted to do war service as a nursery teacher. She liked working with kids, but disliked the military regime of war service, and started to become passive resistance in the war effort. Her father in 1942 was sent to prison when he made a remark that Hitler was God's scourge. After 6 months in the National Labor Service, 1942, Sophie enrolled at the University of Munich as a biology and philosophy student. She hoped to attend medical school like her brother Hans, who was also attending the University of Munich.
God's scourge. Maybe instead of calling the blue-haired devil here Satan's dirty little secret, we'll just call her God's scourge.
That may be more appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Softer, don't you think?
I think it is. It's descriptive. It gets the point across.
It does. Okay, so with her brother Hans, she became associated with a group of friends who shared similar artistic and cultural interests. And they also developed a similar shared political views, which increasingly opposed the Nazi regime in which they lived under. She came in contact with philosophers such as Theodor Heckler, who posed questions on how individuals should behave under a dictatorship. Kind of how we have to behave when Brandy's around.
Pretty much. Yeah. She puts the dick in dictator.
She sure does. So political attitude soon became the essential criterion in Hans and Sophie's choice of friends. So they sought friends.
They sought
friends who were had the same political leanings. Both Hans and Sophie became friends with a young man named Alexander Schmorell. Schmorell's family had long opposed the Nazi regime. Now, breaking from the common theory that citizens, I mean, you know, here's the thing. Okay, so this was a difficult time, and it was in some instances it was hard to get people to support the resistance, not only because they feared the Gestapo, but also because, you know, the country was at war, and many of them had young sons or brothers or fathers who were, you know...
Yeah, they felt like they were betraying their sons if they were
exactly supporting the resistance. Exactly. So, but this group tried their best to organize a resistance that brought into question the Nazi regime. They were nonviolent. Mostly a group of philosophy students and medical students. But they had to be careful because the Gestapo did have presence everywhere. And even, like we said, even though they were small in number in a lot of cases in small towns, they were larger in number in bigger cities. And it wasn't only the Gestapo you had to worry about. You had to worry about your fellow citizens turning you in. And if they denounced you to the Gestapo, to the secret police would investigate, and if you were found to be guilty, you faced prison or worse. So it was, you had to be very careful. So they had to be very careful on how they went about this.
Well, and the other thing to remember with people not wanting to join the resistance, Timmy, is that Germany had been through some hard, hard times after World War I.
Sure, they've been through a great deal.
Which allowed Hitler to, basically say, hey, let me take care of this, I can fix this.
Yeah, the Treaty of Versailles was very punitive. After World War I, after 1918, the German mark was basically worthless. I mean, people used it. You could have a whole barrel full of it and not have enough to
eat.
People
were getting paid twice a day.
Yeah. And inflation was like crazy high. Unemployment was crazy high. So Hitler did some things that he brought in a war economy and everyone was working. So that was one thing that, did work.
But they had gone from these horrible times, economic times, into, pretty much
full employment.
Well-being and full employment.
Yeah.
So they developed a very, very strong sense of nationalism, even though, most... I can't believe most rational people did not think, you know, this guy's got a screw loose here. Yeah. You know, he's a little dangerous. But
like, it takes this, yeah, the Jewish question is a little bit too far.
Yeah, but I ain't eating, you know, I'm not eating radishes and boiling them every night for dinner.
We're not killing animals
so
in Berlin
Zoo. So it's
a trade-off. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I'm not eating my dog.
Right.
So
exactly.
I'll go ahead and, you know, put up with this.
And of course, a lot of citizens felt humiliated after the First World War, and he brought back the sense of German pride. But as you said, not to anyway excuse Hitler, but just saying that there were people who supported him, and not everyone who later would say, oh, you know, I was just following orders. Mm-hmm. There were people who actually supported him, and that's the
thing that people don't want to say about Germany often, and I'm being a Lutheran, mm-hmm. And studying up on this, you know, Martin Luther came from Germany. Martin Luther was horribly anti-Semitic, mm-hmm. and many people will say that the Holocaust began with Martin Luther, mm-hmm. and he had turned really from that moment on. Germany was very anti-Jewish.
One of the things that I heard this in a podcast, and I wish I knew which one, because I've listened to so many, but I heard a professor say that on a history podcast that, you know what led to the Reformation?
No.
The Black Plague. Because the Black Plague... There was, because it killed, you know, like a third mm-hmm. of Europe.
Yeah.
And left a huge shortage of labor. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that included priests. So the church started accepting priests who were maybe not as educated or mm-hmm. not as morally, sound. Mm-hmm. And that... Over time, because they had these inferior priests, that led to the Reformation. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, just as a side note. Anyway.
But that's what, you know, when people talk, we could do five podcasts on this, but the German people as a whole had a bias against Jews anyway, mm-hmm. and that had started long before Hitler came along.
Yeah, and he was able to...
Exploit it.
So in 1938, their new friend, Alex Schmorell, served an obligatory 2 years Army service while he completed training to be a medic. He served on the Eastern Front. So he saw what was going on. And he saw what was going on with the Jews that were being, you know, mm-hmm. the story was that they were being relocated. Well, right. He knew that they were actually being sent off to concentration camps and exterminated.
He was out where Colonel Klink never wanted to go.
Yes, he was on the Eastern Front.
The SS always threatened to send you to the Eastern Front.
Yeah, that's where you never wanted to go. Right. So anyway, Schmorell was attending medical school there in Munich, and he became friends with Sophie and her brother Hans. By 1942, most of the members that would make up the White Rose Society were all attending the University of Munich. And again, they chose the name White Rose to represent purity and innocence in face of evil, that being the Nazi regime.
So me and you could join, but the devil could never join.
No, she couldn't, because she's not pure.
You had a purity thing to get her.
So within the first couple of months at the University of Munich, this group started holding weekly or nightly talks, and would even invite some professors and writers and musicians to the group. And they fostered a deep friendship and love for each other. Initially, they avoided the talk of politics, but, you know, somewhere along the line, they started talking about politics and decided that they had to do something in face of the evil Nazi regime. So they started writing these leaflets to distribute. They called them the Leaves of the White Rose. Now, initially, it was Hans and Alex Schmorell who wrote the first four. There were six opposition leaflets total, but only six, but... the first four, Hans and Alex, wrote, And these leaflets attacked the Nazi regime. It mentioned their crimes. It talked about the mass extermination of the Jews, the dictatorship, the eliminations of persons.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Freedoms for ordinary German citizens. It called on the regime change, and it called for Germans to rise up and resist the oppression of their government. The leaflets contained quotes from great philosophers and writers, but it was geared mostly toward the intellectual public, especially students and professors. They really wanted to see students rise up and fight back against the regime.
Every time I hear Hans, I keep waiting for Franz to pop in.
I know.
And, you know, very quickly, when Renee was pregnant with the twins, they called him Baby A and Baby B. And we did not call him. That's what they do at the hospital. Uh-huh. Baby A, baby B.
Right.
We went with Hans and Franz. We could call him Hans and Franz.
Do you still call him that now? Well, you know which is which?
I know which is which. Okay. But for the first month that they was born to me, even though we named them Taylor and Tanner, we was calling them Hans and Franz.
So which one's, which, who is Taylor?
Tanner was Hans, Taylor was Franz.
Okay. So at the bottom of these leaflets, they had the phrase, please make as many copies of this leaflets as you can and distribute them. So they were trying to get the word out. And most of this was done through mail, but they also would, you know, put them in like telephone boxes, train stations, around campus, anywhere that, you know, that they could, spread the word. Since traveling on trains with, you know, these documents was extremely dangerous and risky because if they were caught, it was curtains, females began to take on the responsibility of distributing leaflets because it thought that they were less likely to be searched by the Gestapo. The first 100 leaflets that the students mailed, 35 of them were given to the Gestapo. Oh. So, yeah, people were turning them in right away. Yeah, the Gestapo was informed right away. Now, some of the leaflets, it's, you know, it's kind of like our podcast. It's amazing in the different parts of the world that we reach. Some of these leaflets made their way to Austria, to France, to occupied France, to the Netherlands. So even though they, you know, they're just these groups of, you know, a few students handing out these, printing these leaflets. And, you know, there was a paper shortage at the time. There was...
Went viral, Timmy.
They did. These things went viral. And but it wasn't for long. It wasn't long before the Gestapo was aware of it. Now, all four leaflets, the first four, were written in a relatively short period of time between June 27th and July 12th, so only almost 2 weeks in 1942. As far as we know today, Hans wrote the first and the fourth leaflets, and Alex Schmorell wrote the second and third one.
And if you're so inclined, you can get on Wikipedia. Look up these things.
Oh, yeah, there's all kind of websites where you can actually read the leaflets, and we'll talk about some resources later. The internet's just full of resources on Sophie and on the White Rose Society. In fact, there's White Rose Societies or chapters all around the world today. So the leaves, or these leaflets of the white rose, caused a remarkable action among reaction among the student body, as they start to question and challenge the regime's authority and stimulate discussions among the students. So although Hans originally, so Sophie was involved in this. Now, although Hans originally opposed her participation, he couldn't keep her out. She just was, insistent on joining. But, he was trying to protect her, basically. Mm-hmm. And she soon became one of the more vocal leaders of the group. In addition to the leaflets, the six leaflets, they also wrote graffiti, which, can you imagine being caught by the Gestapo writing, kill Hitler or whatever, down with Hitler.
And that's back before they had spray paint, Timmy.
Yeah.
He had to use a brush in.
Now, one of the friends in their circle was Christopher Prost. He had joined the White Rose Society around the same time. He was a young man who didn't write any of the leaflets, but he helped distribute them. And he was sympathetic to the cause. Now, he had three children. He was newlywed, and he had three young kids. So in the later months of the summer, 1942, the university did not know what to do with medical students that they had drafted and sent to the Russian front for 3 months. So they kept, these students kept leaving, going for these 3 months of service and coming back, and they were all starting to see the atrocities that were occurring. During this time, another student, William Graff, befriended Hans and Alex and became active in the White Rose Society. So the White Rose Society is starting to grow, and of course, as it's starting to grow, the greater risk that someone is going to, find out about it, right? Mm-hmm. So, the main objective of the group was to increase awareness and really to spark resistance. The leaflets were mailed to people in Germany by picking their names and addresses out of telephone directories. I mentioned a while ago German radio. If you ever get a chance, while I was researching this story, TVs were available in Germany in the 30s. I don't know when they became available here. It had to be at least the late 40s or early 50s, right? Mm-hmm. But they were available in Germany in the late 30s. And if you want to see something creepy, go to YouTube and look up Nazi TV.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
And they've got old video of the TV stations when they come on the air or went off the air. And it's really creepy to watch.
I bet they didn't look as good as Huey Long did on TV.
No. But it's creepy. If you get a chance, just Google or go on YouTube and check it out. But anyway, back to the story. They left leaflets all over the place in the hopes that they could restore democracy and rid Germany of Hitler's tyrannical rule.
Well, and Sophie took a big part, obviously, in distributing these leaflets, Timmy, and carrying message because she was a woman. And as you said, she was very less likely to be stopped by the SS.
Right.
Now, at this point, bombings over Germany began to take place, and citizens were firsthand feeling the effect of the war.
Yeah, now it's home. It's coming home.
Yeah. So they were a little bit more willing to voice their opinions against the regime. Mm-hmm. Now, around this time, Kurt Huber, a professor of philosophy, psychology, and musicology, sounds a little bit like the colonel there.
A well-rounded individual like you.
Yes. At the University of Munich, joined the campaign. Although these pamphlets were the main method of opposition by the White Rose, on February 4th, 8th, and 15th, they painted huge slogans on walls throughout Munich, including the university. Now, they didn't get real creative with this because they didn't have spray paint, and they didn't have taggers, and they didn't have, but they were.
And there was a war on.
Yeah, I mean, and there was a war on, but they would paint freedom, down with Hitler, which is, that would cause Hitler to stay up night tweeting people. And
that's not the most creative
yeah.
slogan and in a world, but it works.
Hitler the mass murderer.
It gets to the point.
It got the points across.
Now, a great turning point in the war here, and for them, was the fall of Stalingrad in February 1943, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
It inspired Huber to write a fifth leaflet at the request of Hans, and the group he wrote it, the group accepted the draft, made just a few changes, and sent it out on February 16th and 18th.
Okay.
This leaflet took a different turn and was now entitled Leaflets of the Resistance Movement of Germany, Timmy, as was the sixth and final leaflet. Now, furious Nazi officials tried to clear away the unexpected call for freedom and justice. The rebellion began to spread, first by jumping to Berlin, Timmy. So, you know, these Nazis are just pissed as hell. When
yeah, the war's going bad.
War's going bad. This movement's gaining momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to do something. Now, a medical student who was friends with Hans took the responsibility of forming a similar resistance group there over in Munich,
mm-hmm.
and brought copies of the leaflets that the group wrote.
Yeah, and then we can't emphasize this enough. These leaflets, it sounds, you know, pretty, you know, mild.
Yeah, it sounds, yeah.
And not that serious. But if you are caught with these things, it was trouble.
If you were caught with one, you better run up to the SS guy and say, oh, look what I found on the ground here. Cause
which is kind of what they
ass.
Try to do
yeah.
later on.
So now, inspired by the courage of the White Rose, Timmy, students also decided to become active in Freiburg.
Mm-hmm.
Later, a female student carried a leaflet to Hamburg, where yet another group of students took up the responsibility of spreading the resistance even further. Germany was at this point a strong police state which kept a high degree of surveillance on any resistance activity. After leaflets were found in the University of Munich, the local Gestapo stepped up its efforts to catch the resistors, Timmy.
Yeah, so they're on it now.
Oh yeah, they got although they remind me of Wile E. Coyote, but
yeah.
Now Hans and Alex also began painting anti-Nazi slogans on buildings in Munich. Then they did the sixth leaflet, Timmy, in February 1943. That would be their final one.
Yeah, the final one.
So on February, they went to the university with Sophie and Hans went to the university with a large suitcase filled with leaflets to distribute. They placed stacks in the hallways minutes before the lectures were dismissed, but there were still extra leaflets when finished.
Yeah, this is like they're in the building.
Yeah.
All classes are in session. And it's kind of like high school here, or when I was in kid, you had a bell, right?
Yeah.
The bell
they
rang.
They release the students.
Yeah. So they were in there while the classes were in session to distribute these leaflets around on the different floors, so that the students would find them after class.
Right. Now. They placed stacks, but there was still extra. There were still, after they left all these stacks in the hallway, they had some finished.
Okay.
So Hans and Sophie decided to go up to the roof and dump the rest of the suitcase onto the courtyard, which is effective, but not the best idea. They damn near went unnoticed, but they were observed by a senior janitor who was also a Nazi party member.
Fucking Nazi janitor.
And you know, pretty much, hasn't every janitor
every
you run into your life been a Nazi?
Yeah,
I mean,
pretty much. Yeah.
I ain't never met a cool janitor.
No,
they're always
no.
Nazi
yeah.
bastards.
Yeah.
So anyway, he turned them over to the Gestapo. Now, when a draft of a leaflet that Christopher Probst had written was found in Hans' pocket, Probst was arrested as well.
Yeah, and this is the guy with three kids.
Yeah. Sophie, Hans, and Christopher were all interrogated by the Gestapo. Sophie had a chance. Now, Sophie, she had a chance for freedom here, Timmy. She was an honorable girl. You got to give her this. She had a great deal of honor, a great deal of courage.
Yeah, she was very resistant for a long time. They had her stories all straight. But then they searched their apartment and they found some additional stuff on them, and then it was hard to deny, but. She would not rat out her
she
friends.
She wouldn't break. No, she wasn't going to be a rat. So they interrogated her.
And she was like 21 at the time.
Yeah.
Young girl.
She was only, that's how old she was, 21. They gave her the opportunity to blame all of the actions on her brother, so that only he and Christopher would be executed. But you know what she said to me?
What did she say?
She said, fuck you Nazis.
Well, I don't think she said that.
No, she said. I don't know how to do it in German, but she was like, fucking die Nazien.
I don't think she said that, but she was resisting.
She took all the blame.
She did.
She said, you know what? They're perfectly innocent. I did all of it.
Yeah.
So kiss my ass, Nazi.
Yeah, it was me.
Yeah. And that she said Hans and Christopher should go free because I did it all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they didn't believe her. So they had a people's court in February of 1943 in a trial that lasted
It was a show trial.
Basically. Yeah, it was a trial that lasted 4 hours. Hans, Sophie, and Christopher Probst, they were all convicted of high treason, sentenced to death. The presiding judge, Roland Freisler...
This guy, he's a piece of work. We're going to have to do a podcast on him when he was one of the leading judges in Nazi Germany. He's a real piece of shit.
Well, he could not understand what would corrupt such fine German youths. They all come from good families, attended German schools, and been a member of the Hitler Youth. Now, Sophie shocked everyone in the courtroom when she said, y'all can kiss my ass.
Now, I don't think she said that.
She said, y'all can kiss my ass.
No.
She said, someday, after all, I'm sorry, Timmy, she said, y'all can kiss my ass.
No, she did not say that. Give the quote,
and
right quote.
And then she said, after that, somebody, after all, had to make a start. What we wrote and said is also believed by many others. They just don't dare express themselves as we did. You know the war is lost. Why don't you have the balls to face it?
She didn't say the balls to face it, but...
She said courage. But that was on the
And that was a sentiment,
there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, so she says it's in open court. And she also said, I don't think I have the quote in there, but I think something to the effect, where we stand today, you will stand tomorrow. Meaning, like, you know this war is going to be over soon, and they're going to come for you. So...
And what did John Wilkes Booth say? Six of a tyrannous?
Yeah, something like that.
Scott will correct me on that. Yeah.
Death to the tyrants.
Yeah. But that's what she was saying. Now, her parents weren't even allowed into the trial, Timmy. And once she got escorted back to the prisons, the guards permitted the Scholes to reunite for the last time because the guards were so impressed with these two kids' bravery.
Yeah, the judge was a bit of an ass, but the guards were really impressed, and they let them reunite, and let Sophie and Hans spend time alone with their parents, and then they let Sophie, Hans, and Pro spend time together before. I think they gave them a cigarette too.
Yeah,
and spent some time together before what happens next. And they were sentenced to death.
They were sentenced to death, and they were. Oddly, once they let Hans, Christopher, and Sophie spend some time, have one last meeting together, mm-hmm. and then they led them to the gallows.
Now, the interesting thing here is Sophie was under the impression, because at the law at the time, if you were sentenced to death, you had 99 days before mm-hmm. the execution.
Yeah, and this was immediate.
This they did immediately, mm-hmm. yeah.
And once they finished, Sophie was the first led to the guillotine, Timmy. They didn't do firing squads. They were doing guillotines on this. And a witness described Sophie as unflinching as she walked to her death. The executioner also remarked that he had never seen someone meet the end of life as courageously as she did. Sophie Scholl was executed by guillotine on February 22nd, 1943, She was 21 years old. Her last words were, "Die son schink not,"
which means,
"My only regret is that I have one ass for you all to kiss." That's what she said. No, her last words were, "The sun still shines."
The sun still shines. Yes.
And then she said,
"No,
my
she didn't
only
say
regret
that.
Is
then
that
her
I
head
have
came
but
off.
One ass.
No, then her head came off."
So the next to be executed was Christopher, who shouted, "We shall meet each other in a few minutes," right before his death. He was married and had three small children, as we have said. The last was Hans. His last words were simply, "Long live the freedom."
Yep.
Hals was 24 years old when he was killed. The Nazis were so eager to eliminate the danger from the regime that the news of the incident wasn't even released until after these executions took place.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it was they caught him, they tried him, and convicted him all in the matter of, you know, like 48 hours.
Yeah. One day of the trial, the next day they were dead.
Yeah.
Now, this was not the end of the killing. Alex Schmorell, he tried to escape to Switzerland, but had to retreat due to deep snow. I wonder what the hell he was thinking.
Yeah, he
oh, look at this. I'm going up to Swiss Alps.
Well, actually,
I don't know what
they had back. You know, they had contingency plans. He had fake passports and everything, but they caught him.
He was actually arrested during an air raid after being betrayed by a former girlfriend who was a member of the Nazi Party.
Yeah, and see, never date Nazis, I'm telling you.
And you know the problem to me is...
I mean, they're blonde, they're hot, but, you know, stay away from them.
But you never know who... You never know.
Yeah.
You never know if the girl you're laying with...
If they're blonde and blue-eyed, you know, you got to be careful.
Yeah. Those who sleep with Nazis wake up without heads.
Yes, yes.
There's an old saying.
Beware of Nazis.
So he gets arrested.
I can't believe you called Donald Trump a Nazi. You know we're going to lose like a quarter of all.
No, I didn't call him a Nazi, did I?
No, you didn't. You said I think you made some sort of comparison, but
no. It's if you read Facebook and stuff like that, you know, everybody's making these comparisons
right.
to him wanting to be Hitler, and we're going into this. And I think that we have, you know, it's a little some hyperbole there because I like to think that our country has stronger checks and balances.
Yeah.
You know,
I got you.
And the thing that we have, that's what I mean, is I think that, you know, people are exaggerating this fear. Not that I think he...
Right.
And, you know, when you look at the guy and you listen to him, the guy doesn't have any desire to be Hitler.
Right.
He doesn't, because that'd actually be work. I mean,
that'd take effort.
He's not even doing the security briefings to me. He's like, oh, fuck it. That's what I got Pence here for.
Yeah.
But no, that's what I meant is that...
I got you. Hitler didn't delegate well.
But he is a very he sees the presidential position as one of great power, and I think he's going to be checked very quickly by the Senate, who he's made a lot of enemies. But
sure,
I'm getting off topic there. But no, I did not mean to compare.
Okay.
That's what I was actually trying to do, is say the comparisons are to me very off base.
Okay, gotcha. So far.
Because we couldn't have that. Because think about what Hitler did. He had 7 years from 32 to 39, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had 7 years of really unfettered power.
Right.
Any president that we have only has 8 years of limited power.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say he might not nuke Canada.
Well.
And that's not to say Canada might not have it coming.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, but as far as that kind of... But
Hitler consolidated power. That's how he wouldn't have unlimited power. He consolidated it.
Yeah, but that happened in one move because of the way their government system was set up. And ours is set up differently. So I think that we...
You're optimistic.
I am an optimist because I think that government is... I think most people in government are incompetent.
Including us,
so
you were not insulting our Republican friends.
Oh no, not at all. That's what I was saying is that I think people on our, you know, I'm obviously, you know, my politics
left.
I think people are overreacting somewhat.
Okay.
You know, by saying because we're in a completely different system where, you know, we have checks and balances in the military. And here's the big difference, Timmy. Is where Hitler got his power is he got the military and everybody else to swear loyalty oaths to. The minute you said to our military, you are going to swear an oath to loyalty to me and not the Constitution, they would take you out of office.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I mean.
Okay.
It would never happen.
Gotcha.
So let's get back to Alex Schmorell.
Yes.
He finds this hot blonde. He, you know, meets her on Tinder or whatever.
And Greta.
It turns out, huh?
I said her name was Greta, but I'm making
Greta. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, of course, turns him in like most, you know, you
most being a women, good Nazi.
Yeah. Any, if they're too hot to be true,
yeah,
they're probably too hot to be
true. Yeah. Is she? Yeah.
So, now then they catch up with Huber,
mm-hmm.
and both are tried and convicted. And this is in April. Now they got to wait all the way till July.
And Huber is a professor that was involved in the involved with the White Rose Society. He helped write the sixth leaflet.
Yeah, and William Graff, who we mentioned mm-hmm. before, they caught him. He was executed on October 12, 1943. Now, hundreds of other people connected with White Rose were arrested and sentenced to various punishments. George Wittenstein, he was the only one to survive the war. He was tried after attempting to help a Jewish woman escape from Germany, but was found not guilty and set free. The final White Rose leaflet was eventually smuggled out of Germany and intercepted. This is funny. It was intercepted by the Allied forces.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they just printed up shitloads and millions of these things.
The Allies.
The Allies did. And dropped them over Germany.
Leaflets.
Leaflets.
So the message did get out.
Yeah, it got out.
And wide scale.
So since the end of the war, the members of the White Rose have become celebrated figures as German society has searched for positive role models from that period.
Yeah, they want something to be proud of, and so they look to these young kids as role models.
So the square where the Central Hall of Munich University is located has been named Geigwister Scholl Platz, after Hans and Sophie Scholl. The square opposite is now named Professor Huber Platz.
Yeah, who is also involved with the, as we mentioned, with the movement.
Now, two large fountains in front of the university are named after Professor Huber. Now, many schools, streets, and other places in Germany are named in memory of the White Rose. Now, there's a book, a very good book, Sophie Scholl and the White Rose, that was published in English in February 2006. And there's also a film, Sophie Scholl, The Final Days, and it received an Academy Award nomination, Demi.
Yeah, it's critically acclaimed. I watched it. It's available on YouTube, and I, knowing that we were going to do this today, I watched it last night, and just to see if I missed anything.
It's subtitled, right?
It's subtitled. It's in English subtitles, and I was just checking to see if we missed anything.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. We covered most of it, but it's a very good movie. If you, it's free on YouTube. So
now here's an interesting one. Alexander Schmorell.
Mm-hmm.
He was made a saint by the Russian Orthodox Church.
Yeah, he was canonized for his efforts.
Now, today, the White Rose Society has numerous chapters in the United States and around the world. Like their original members, they work to speak out against oppression and injustice. Their mission is to work for a more peaceful and just world. Mm-hmm. And I actually looked up some White Rose. There's chapters in every big city
mm-hmm.
in the United States, and they say something interesting that we're nonviolent,
mm-hmm.
but we take whatever action is necessary. If you were to see a man beating an innocent woman,
right,
you sometimes that requires violence to right. rectify.
So, right, right.
So they're not a person who's going to run up and say,
yeah,
hey, stop that.
Right,
they're going to hit you over the head with a club.
Yeah. So, all right, Colonel, your final thoughts on Sophie Scholl and the White Rose Society.
Well, I think in these times, and this is a problem I've always had, and I think that, it, at the risk of offending anybody,
mm-hmm.
they were the true patriots there, and, mm-hmm. and I think that when we... There's a funny thing, and I may have said this before, that's happened to us since 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody with a uniform suddenly is a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Without question.
Mm-hmm.
Without question. Be it a policeman,
mm-hmm.
be it a fireman, be it someone in the military. And granted, these are good people, but greater part of them. But what happens is when the government keeps beating that into your head, Timmy,
mm-hmm.
they can do what they want without question.
Right. It's always good to question authority.
Right. And I believe even in this country, we've gotten to the point where if you question what the military is doing,
it comes off
supporting our troops.
You're unpatriotic. And that's what they charged, Sophie And the other members of the right rose with not only high treason, but aiding and abetting the enemy and demoralizing their own troops. So, and like I said, if you're someone, you got a son serving on the Eastern Front, you probably don't want to hear, you know, this war is bad and we're evil and, you know, we're going to lose the war. You know, you probably don't want to hear that, so...
But I can tell you this. I walked into a thing that left an impression on me I'll never forget, Timmy. We were having a party here at work, and I had to go up to the grocery store to get a couple cases of soda. And there was a bank inside the grocery store, and as I'm getting out of my car, a Marine honor guard, Marine, and three Marines in full dress blues were getting out of a car, walking ahead of me into the grocery store. And this was at the beginning of the Iraq War. And as they walked in, I was walking in behind them, and they turned left, and I had to turn left to get to the soda. And when the woman working at the bank saw them, Timmy, she let out a scream that I will never forget. And the reason that the Marine Color Guard was there was to inform her that her son had been killed in Iraq. And they had been, and they had a man with them, and apparently the man was the father. And he could not call the woman at work to tell her, you know. Mm-hmm. So he showed up with these Marines, and you know, this woman, you just think, I wonder what her opinion of that war is. Today. But it's something that can become very, and especially in America, we have an all. How many people do you know in the military? It's a very abstract thing when people are getting killed, when people are getting. So when wars are going on, we don't really tend to speak up much because they don't influence us, and I believe this. It's one of my core beliefs that we should reinstate the draft and have no deferments. And if we reinstated the draft and had no deferments, you would hear people speaking out and saying, you are not sending my son over to some godforsaken country to protect oil fields for whatever. That's just not going to happen. But since we have an all-volunteer army and it's not impacting us, you know, we kind of give the government a little too much leeway.
And I'm sure Sophie Scholl would have said, you know, she had a fiancé, we didn't mention it, she had a fiancé who was on the Eastern Front.
Yeah.
I mean, she wanted, you know, she wasn't supporting the troops.
Yeah.
She wanted to bring the troops.
She wanted to bring them home. And sometimes supporting the troops, the best way to support them is bring them home and take care of them when they get here.
Exactly. All right, Colonel, you have some shout-outs for us?
I do have shout-outs today, awesome. Timmy. We got some new listeners, Timmy.
Good. We love
new listeners. Well, not new listeners, new to our page.
All right.
But first, I got to give our first shout out to
Tasha. Out there in Cali.
Mm-hmm. Lovely Tasha. I haven't seen her on the page, so stop in and say hello to us, Tasha.
Yes, we miss you.
So we got some new listeners. Tracy Lynn Busby. And this one, Floyd D. Lisa.
Yeah.
I might be a little confused with that.
Yeah.
Now, Jennifer Winans Miller. Vasilios.
Did you say Tracy? I'm sorry, I was...
Tracy Lynn Busby?
Yeah, okay. Hey, yeah. Tracy, I was dealing with the sound here.
Right. Oh, okay, yeah. And I got Vasilios. I'm not even going to try his last name. Allegianus, I believe. Okay. Mariam Buckwald and Arif Riff.
Okay.
We got Jeff Girdley, Angie Ball, Sam Hildebrand.
Hey, Sam.
Of course, we got Jennifer and Linda.
Hey, Jennifer. Mentioned them earlier.
Hunter. Your name. Yep. Missy Horton.
Hey, Missy.
We got the lovely Britt and Chris, and I hope they're doing well.
Down there in Hotlanta.
Yes. Celine.
How you doing?
Jeff Chestnut.
How you doing, Jeff?
Teresa Slavin.
Jeff's down in Dominica. Teresa, just had a birthday. Happy birthday, Teresa.
Yeah, happy birthday. Yesterday was her birthday.
You know, most serial killers are born in November.
They are.
It's, yeah. It's, We have a lot of them and listen to the show.
I don't trust Teresa anyway.
Yeah, she's You got to don't let her have
and
any.
And Allie, you know, Allie was born in.
You can't let Teresa have any sharp objects around.
No, you can't. Colton, of course. Phyllis Munson. Tommy Boom Boom.
Tommy Boomer Shine. What's going on, Tommy?
The Tro Bridges.
Yes.
Clark and Diane. We got Shonda and Larry.
Shonda and Larry. They're two of my favorite people.
And you know what I bet Shonda's doing right now? Yeah. I mean, I know she's probably not, but if I had to guess, Shonda's somewhere raising supplies for the people of Gatlinburg. Or she's down there fighting a damn fire herself. I don't know.
I was thinking about, you know what? I thought about Shonda and Larry, and I thought about Shannon when I was doing this research on this topic. Because mm-hmm. I thought, they would be members of the White Rose
Society.
They would
be the right White Rose people, yes. Yeah.
I'm too lazy. I could not write any flyers.
You do a hell of a job writing up the flyers, but you'd be telling me.
I couldn't pronounce them.
Can you print this stuff for me?
Yeah.
And put it in a box and get it out of here. Yeah. I don't want to mess with it.
Exactly.
We got Jeff Chestnut, of course, who's down in Dominica. Doing the Lord's work. Yeah.
Yes.
Celine, Britt and Chris, Aaron Wentz. Donna and the dog, Donna Curran.
Hey, Donna.
Brian and Lisa Lawton.
Brian and Lisa.
Kate McCarthy.
Hey, Kate, who's such a lovely lady.
She is lovely. Speaking of lovely, and somebody's going through a kind of a little bit of a trying time right now, is the lovely young Fallon.
Yeah, Fallon, I hope things get better for you soon. We're thinking about you.
And we got Monica D. Agostino.
Mm-hmm. Monica,
got that one right.
My Fitbit friend,
Sandy September. I can never get her name right. Bridget Clavey.
Hey, Bridget.
Of course, the lovely Katja.
Katja over there in Denmark.
Yeah, Byron Snellings. We already mentioned, I believe.
The Reverend. The
Reverend Byron. Yep. Okay. Denny McFarlane, William Truax.
Oh, wait a minute, now Denny, we found out, is from Cincinnati.
Yes. Yes.
So. Denny, we'll have to...
We'll have to get you back. We're going to have to get Denny on a podcast next time.
Yeah, we have to get him in there, or can I have lunch or something?
William Truax?
Yes. Is it Truax or Trow?
Truax.
Oh, you got to have... Okay, Truax. You got the right...
Yeah, he corrected me on that one.
Okay, sorry, William.
Let's see, who we got now? Gina Spillane.
Mm-hmm.
Amber Krupp, one of the Colonel's ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Angie Cobes, did I get her already?
I don't think so.
Okay. Gina Spillane, Trixie, Stephanie Quick, Sydney.
Stephanie,
Mike.
Born on May 9th.
Yep.
Oh, Sydney and
Tarantino,
Michael.
Who put something up on the page? I got to get a photo to you because Jamie's going to try to make me a drawing of something.
Oh, cool. We have artists available.
Oh, he's amazing. Huh? Jamie's amazing.
Yes.
Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis. Sunstar, Tara V.
Of course, Tara.
Bond.
Jean Bond.
Lydia, Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover, and Jeff Appel. Christine Bourgeois.
Bourgeois.
Mary Ray.
Hey, Mary.
Katie.
Moorhead.
What do I want for Christmas?
Moorhead.
All right. Rebecca Montanle.
12-year-old.
Mike Eisenhower. Daniel Fredrickson, Andy Spiraccio, Valerio Bishop, Nancy Palomino.
Nancy.
How you doing, Nancy? Kim Kamikaze, Jennifer Hopkins. Or, I'm sorry, Jennifer Hawkins. It's Jeff Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
Tara Nee, Lindsay McMillan, Sunyana, Eddie Rushing, Yo Handler, Sammy James.
Yo Handler, your mama.
My buddy Jason Dykes, Amy Carol Payne. Tyra Jenkins, Annette Petrie, Steph Glenn, Niloy Khan, Christine Madonna, Marie Barber, Jennifer Potts, of course, Cindy Overstreet Hamilton.
Yes, he's very active on a page. Hi, Cindy.
Mike Arnold, Melissa Lebrano, Brittany Powell, Heather Hall, Heather Poole. And then let's get to the Colonel squad.
All right.
We got Angie Ball.
Hey, Angie.
Nicola.
Nicola Reed.
Consigliere.
Yeah, attorney at law.
Lovely little Sarah. Yes. Sarah Spaghetti, Sarah Mimosa, whatever you want to call her. Jennifer Burdick.
Yeah, who just had a recently had a birthday, another November baby.
Was this a big birthday, like 21 or something? Or was she older?
I think she might be 22. 22? I'm just kidding. Okay. I don't know how old
she is. She's very, very...
She's very beautiful.
She's a
beautiful young lady.
She's just a funny, sweet... It's a girl that you just say, you know what? I'll take her for a daughter.
Yes.
Give me her for a daughter. I want her. Karen Barnes, of course. Janet Fitzgerald and Frances Doughton.
Mm-hmm.
My friend up in Chicago, Jessica Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda Bocce Ball.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Tiffany. We can't forget Tiffany.
No, of course, Tiffany. Tiffany Bell.
Tiffany Bell. Good Catholic girl up in Jackson, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And last but definitely not least, because if you make a leash, she will come to your house and chop you into little bitty pieces, Timmy. Allie. And Charlie, of course.
Charlie and Allie.
Allie and Charlie are kind of inseparable. Charlie's crazy in one way, and Allie's crazy in
but
the other.
But they're on like opposite sides of the world. Allie and Charlie, of course, have the Insight podcast. They've just surpassed 500,000 downloads. That's amazing. Yeah. In a short period of time, that podcast. And, of course, I left that podcast to stay with you and Brandy.
Yeah, that was you are like kind of Pete Best of the Beatles.
I really am.
I think you might have made a poor choice there.
Yeah.
But,
you're stuck with me now. Okay. And of course, our thoughts and prayers are with Lady Beverly.
Yes. Lady Beverly, who lost her father suddenly.
Yes.
And the service and everything was yesterday. Lady Beverly, you know, we're thinking about you, and we always do. But we hope that we can, and you know, and to Brandy. Brandy is going through an extremely difficult time. She has posted on, so I don't feel bad saying this. She's posted this. Brandy is very, very close to her grandmother,
Sweet D,
and she, her grandmother is not doing well. She's basically in hospice. They're really, this could happen at any given moment. So Brandy is. The reason is Brandy is not here is because she is sitting next to her grandmother.
Yes, where she should be.
Yeah, where she should be. So we really, my wife said, go in and give Brandy a hug. And I said, Brandy will punch me in the throat if I do that. But
we've been kind to Brandy this week.
Yeah, we have been nice to Brandy. And
we can bash her on the podcast because she doesn't listen.
She doesn't listen, so we can say whatever we want. But we are definitely thinking about you, Brandy, and we know that the people that listen are too, and of course, Lady Beverly. Not Lady Beverly, but Her Royalness, Dottie Scott.
My mom is getting active on the page. It's kind of scary.
And it's so funny because I still tell you, Renee doesn't pay much attention to Facebook. She doesn't even look at her own account much.
Right.
But Renee will point out to me every time your mom comments on something that I post. I could have, and you know, I get a lot of comments things.
Right.
She'll say, "Tim's mom commented on your post."
She found like the emojis now. Yeah. So now she's like all over the dogs and
but it's almost like
puppies.
Bruce Springsteen's commenting on my. Renee's like, you know, Dottie, Tim's mom posted or commented on your post. Or your mom, because your mom always has very kind things to say.
Yes.
Renee's
non-controversial.
Mom. She is such a sweet woman. But Renee will point out to me, Tim's mom commented, and I was like, 140 people commented. Yeah,
and people will, I feel bad because people will like try to engage in her, but she doesn't understand tagging. So if someone says something to her, she doesn't necessarily see that.
Right.
So if you're, you know, let me know.
She's a lovely woman. She's a very sweet woman.
You can find us on Facebook. We have two pages, History Dweebs, which is basically just our regular history pod, our history topics. And you can find us on History Dweebs, the podcast. That's where our listeners hang out and we interact with them. So please join us on History Dweebs, the podcast on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at History Dweebs 1. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, please take a minute, subscribe, and leave us a review. It's how other people find us. Thank you very much for joining us. Colonel, any final thoughts?
No, I thought this was a great story, Timmy.
Thank you. We try to do, you know, we'll be back to serial killers. Don't worry. We haven't given them up. We're just mixing things up a little bit, but we'll be back to, we'd like to save them for Brandy. But thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you again next time on History Dweebs. Goodbye, everyone.
Good day, listeners.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.